We have Senior Judge Dave Sentell of the D.C. Circus join us for this series of cases that we're going to have this week. The first case we have on docket this morning is United States v. Hennings. Is the defense ready? Okay, you may proceed.
Chief Judge Erdman, members of the court, may it please the court. I'm Captain Jennifer Bierman, and along with Captain...
Counsel, could you speak up a little?
Yes, sir.
Maybe move that microphone over a little bit. There you go.
Thank you.
I apologize. I'm Captain Jennifer Bierman, along with Captain Heather Traigle. We represent Major Antoine Henning. The Army Court exceeded its authority under Article 62 in this case by engaging in fact-finding and then applying a standard of review akin to de novo. As a result, this court should pierce through the CCA's decision, review the military judge's decision directly, and conclude the military judge did not abuse his discretion.
Don't we do that anyway? I mean, in a sense, isn't this issue miscast? Isn't that what we do in 62 appeals?
Yes, Your Honor.
We pierce the CCA veil and we go straight to the military judge.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so it really doesn't matter what standard of review the CCA applied. The question is, what do we think of what the judge did?
Your Honor, in this case, the CCA applied the wrong standard of review, but this court can then just go ahead, like you said, and review the military judge's ruling for an abuse of discretion.
Okay.
Yes,
thank
Your
you.
Honor. And here, in doing so, the military judge did not abuse his discretion, because if you look through the record, all the findings of fact, to include the two that the Army Court found erroneous, were supported by evidence in the record. What the Army Court failed to do was consider contrary evidence. Here, we had controverted facts. Unlike in United States versus Baker, where we had controverted facts and the Army Court engaged in fact-finding, here we had government experts and a defense expert who gave conflicting testimony. The military judge weighed the evidence and found in favor of the defense. So rather than looking through the record to find the evidence that supported the military judge in this case, the Army Court wholly believed the government's experts. Here, the two findings of fact that the Army Court found erroneous were both supported by evidence. First, the statistic used by the labs, there was evidence in the record to show that those were precluded by the guidelines, specifically at Joint Appendix 86, 87, and 115, where the defense experts stated that they were using a mixed bag approach, mixing the assumptions, and applying them across the loci, which paragraph 4 of the guidelines states is precluded.
Is this the SWIGDOM issue?
Yes, Your Honor, okay. The Scientific Working Group Guidelines.
Right. However you pronounce it.
Yes, Your Honor. Additionally, here the Army Court said that it was erroneous for the military judge to say the lab didn't conclude whether dropout occurred. And here the military judge noted that the government experts said that their formula did assume dropout. But on the other end, Dr. Crane, the defense expert, testified at Joint Appendix 81 and 82 that there was no way to make a conclusive determination regarding dropout in the sample.
Did that go to admissibility, or would that go to weight of the evidence for the fact finder after the evidence has been admitted?
Your Honor, this goes to admissibility because here we're not dealing with an opinion of the experts as to whether or not you could, what you could draw from this sample. It had to do with the specific formula that was applied in this case, and that formula needs to be shown to be reliable. The government failed to meet their burden in this case because they didn't put on any evidence other than the government experts stating, we did not come up with this formula on our own. They didn't put on any evidence as to where this formula comes from, how many labs use this formula, how often their own lab uses this formula, how often this formula has been looked at during audits. They simply stated, we did not come up with it. And because of that, the Army Court did not even address the military judge's finding that this formula was not accepted in the scientific community. And therefore, the military judge did not abuse his discretion in excluding this evidence as unreliable because the military judge could have rested on that alone. But the Army Court didn't address that finding by the military judge at all. Additionally, the Army Court stated that the military judge confused error rates and statistical cutoff. However, courts have stated that the statistical cutoff is not a reason to either exclude or include evidence. Rather, there is no set determination on how relevant it is based on the statistical cutoff. So in Graves, courts have adopted the thinking by the court there where they're reluctant to give the statistical cutoff, and they said that in a probability of 1 in 2 statistic, they weren't going to let that in. It was inadmissible. But 1 in 2,900, it was. So here, when the military judge looked at 1 in 220 as the statistic, it was in the range that was acceptable for the military judge to exclude. Even if this court finds that the military judge abused his discretion regarding the formula's reliability, he properly excluded the evidence under MRE 403. Rather than reviewing the military judge's balancing test for an abuse of discretion, the Army Court conducted its own balancing test. The military judge's test was due great deference here because he properly and thoroughly put his application of the facts to the law on the record. The Army Court merely disagreed with its military judge's assessment that the evidence had minimal probative value. Instead, the Army Court viewed the probative value as high. In doing so, the Army Court ignored the defense expert's testimony that Major Henning could be excluded here. And instead, the language...
Well, the testimony wasn't that he could be excluded. It said, I think what the expert was saying was that the whole thing's inconclusive, and therefore you can't include him. Isn't that what he said?
Your Honor, the defense expert, when he was asked for his opinion on whether or not Major Henning could be included or excluded, he said that it would be his opinion that it would be inconclusive.
Yeah.
But he also said if you use different formulas to approach this, that he would be excluded.
Okay.
So it was incorrect for the Army Court to say the best he could hope for in this 403 analysis is that it was inconclusive, because the best he could hope for was that Dr. Crane said he could also be excluded. And so the language that the Army Court applied to its 403 analysis was such that it seems the Army Court believes that DNA is always highly probative. But that's not true, as we've seen in Graves and how courts have applied the Graves statistical cutoff analysis. Also, the Army Court rephrased this issue not regarding reliability when it approached its analysis under the... It had to do with a battle of the experts. In both the 403 analysis here and regarding liability, the Army Court decided this was a battle of the experts scenario. But that was not the issue before the military judge. The issue before the military judge was whether or not the formula was reliable. Additionally, the Army Court was internally inconsistent within its own ruling. The very opening line of the Army Court's opinion is that the science here is too complicated for even jurists, much less laypeople. But then under its 403 analysis, the Army Court said the safeguards of Daubert can protect this, and therefore it's not at all prejudicial to the accused. Therefore, in conclusion, we respectfully request this court reverse the... Yes, Your Honor.
What sort of deference should we give the findings, the factual findings of the military judge?
Your Honor, this court should give great deference to the military judge. The findings of fact are reviewed de novo, but under Flesher, as long as the military judge places his analysis on the record...
His Daubert analysis.
Yes, Your Honor. His Daubert analysis, that's reviewed de novo as to whether or not he followed the framework. Once this court finds that the military judge followed the framework of Daubert, can only overturn its ruling if he was manifestly erroneous. But the findings of fact themselves are due great deference under Flesher.
Thank you.
Pending further questions from the court, we ask that you affirm the military judge's ruling.
Thank you. The court will now hear from the government.
Chief Judge Erdman, members of the court, may it please the court. I'm Captain Jihan Walker, and along with Captain Carling Dunham, we represent the government in this matter. The Army Court applied the correct standard of review and appropriately determined that the military judge abused his discretion in three ways. First, the military judge made clearly erroneous findings of fact. Second, the military judge misapplied the Daubert framework, usurping the fact finder's role. And third, the military judge misapplied the military rules of evidence 403 balancing test. Now, this military judge made several clearly erroneous findings of fact, at a minimum of six.
Before you go any further, yes, what are we to do with the CCA opinion? Isn't our law essentially that we pierce the CCA and review exactly what the military judge did?
That is this court's precedent, that this court would pierce past the lower court's ruling. Appellant is the one that petitioned the issue as reviewing the Army Court standard of review. Whether this court reviews the Army Court standard of review, it applied the correct standard, pierces past the Army Court, and directly reviews the military judge, the result will still be the same. This military judge's ruling is manifestly erroneous, and he abused his discretion. The first thing the military judge did that is clearly erroneous was that he said that KCPCL's formula did not arrive at a conclusive determination of allelic dropout. And this is erroneous for several reasons. The first being is that the science does not require a conclusive determination. If you look at the SQUAGDM guidelines in paragraph 4 at Joint Appendix 149, it describes the statistical formulas. They use terms of assumptions, reasonable assumptions, not conclusive determinations. When you look at the defense expert's testimony describing the formula, he also says that the KCPCL is effectively presuming that allelic dropout has occurred. He states that at Joint Appendix 66 to 67. He also says her statistic is predicated on the fact that dropout did occur, Joint Appendix page 67. He also conceded, looking at this evidentiary sample, that allelic dropout possibly occurred. He states a good chance that allelic dropout may have occurred at Joint Appendix 86 to 87. He also explains that the smaller the amount of DNA present, the greater the possibility of dropout occurring, and that's at Joint Appendix 82. Ms. Hanna, the KCPCL expert, testified repeatedly that she accounted for allelic dropout. She stated, "My assumptions are that there is a dropout occurring," Joint Appendix 31. So the science also backs this up in addition to that. Both of the experts testified that this was a small sample size, and that with a small sample size like this, there's a greater chance of allelic dropout occurring.
It's a very small sample size. Everybody agrees on that. Which way does that cut?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, it's not about which way it cuts. It's about whether or not the
statistic. Well, yes, it's about which way it cuts, because it's a matter of fact to be determined by scientific evidence.
Well, with this particular sample, there's a reasonable range with which these experts can reasonably disagree. So if you look at the...
Okay, so you got disagreeing experts. The judge picked expert B. You like expert A. Given the deference we give to the military judge in these cases, what are we to make of that? If indeed you've got an expert saying X and an expert saying not X or something else, how is it manifest error for him to take B rather than A?
It's manifestly erroneous because he is usurping the fact finder's role.
Well, if he's saying I don't like the methodology. If he's saying I agree with the defense expert that the methodology the government expert used is flawed, and therefore I'm not going to admit the evidence that it's based on. How is that an abuse of discretion?
It's an abuse of discretion, Your Honor, because these experts agree on the evidentiary sample and the testing process that was placed. They both agree that there's a 5 alleles present at 4 locations. What they disagree is on the interpretation of that data. And the military...
They disagree on the methodology. They disagree on the methodology used to derive the answer.
The defense expert himself said that the KCPCL formula is consistent with and derived from the SQUAGDM guidelines. What they disagree on is the interpretation of those alleles that are missing. And the defense expert states in the record, he says there's essentially three ways to interpret that data. And he talks about this, and he says one is allelic dropout occurred, which means that the appellant is a potential contributor. Another potential consideration is that allelic dropout did not occur and that he could be excluded. And then the defense expert said is that the safest course is to just not draw any conclusion at all. And that's at Joint Appendix 80. And so the military judge's role as gatekeeper under United States versus Caspers is he does not require him to admit only evidence that he personally finds correct and persuasive and to exclude that which he finds incorrect or unpersuasive. Rather, the judge's role is to screen evidence for minimum standards of admissibility and to let the fact finder determine which evidence is more persuasive.
And isn't that exactly what he did?
Respectfully, Your Honor, no, that's not what he did.
Okay. At Joint Appendix 5657, this is Ms. Hanna testifying.
Yes, Your Honor.
Question. You cannot say how many people contributed to that profile, right? Answer, correct. That means that one person could have contributed that minor genetic information. Correct. Two people could have contributed to it. Correct. Three people could have contributed to it. They could, but what we're seeing genetically, that doesn't make much sense since there's at most only two alleles there, if that is understandable. Question. Well, actually, no, I don't understand that, because couldn't each of them have been, each of those loci have been contributed from a different person? Answer, they could.
Yes, Your Honor, the science allows a scientist to assume a number of contributors, but that scientist is not required to know the number of contributors. So in this
No, but that's not the point. The point is it reliable? And it seems to me that this is evidence of record that the judge could and evidently did use to question the reliability of this as applied.
But the science backs up Ms. Hanna's assumptions.
That's a question of fact, which the judge has to decide as part of his gatekeeping, isn't it?
But the judge is not allowed to adopt a defense expert. And in this case, the judge did worse than that, Your Honor. He deemed himself
well,
as
well, let me stop you there just a moment. You say the judge is not allowed to adopt the defense expert?
His role is to decide to screen for minimum standards of admissibility. So when you have a defense expert, Your Honor, stating that there's three ways to interpret this data that the experts mm-hmm. all agree on,
no,
then Ms. Hanna's test...
What do you do about Joint Appendix 71, where the government expert testifies, at least as I understand it, it says, I think unequivocally her practice with respect to stutter peaks is clearly at odds with what it is the SWGDM guidelines recommend, as well as what some peer-reviewed scientific literature that speaks to that topic also recommends. How is that not criticizing her methodology?
Because, Your Honor, at the end of the day, the defense expert's testimony relating to stutter peaks, he does not say that those stutter peaks are, in fact, allelic peaks. He agrees that the alleles are there, because if he had done that...
He's questioning her methodology right there. That's questioning her methodology.
Your Honor, if he had asserted that those stutter peaks were, in fact, allelic peaks, this statistic would be even stronger a match between
the
science...
That's the application. That's the answer you get. I'm talking about the methodology. He's criticizing her methodology and saying that it wasn't in accordance with the procedures or what scientific literature recommends.
What I would report this court to...
I mean, isn't that what it says?
That was his testimony, but it's limited in the sense that is only requiring a consideration of whether that stutter peak is an allelic peak. Ms. Hanna answered that question, said that she did consider it at Joint Appendix 39, and Mr. Hummel testified as well that it's only required to be a consideration, and he testified to that at Joint Appendix 110, 109, and 105.
Counsel, can the government give us a definition or explanation of this formula, of the allele present statistic that the Kansas City Police Lab relies on? In my reading of the record, Ms. Hanna said that they change their assumptions in this formula depending upon the test samples that they're given. And that doesn't seem to me, as a non-scientist, to be a very compelling way to evaluate these things if you're going to be changing your assumptions based on the sample that you're testing.
But to answer your question, Your Honor, is what Ms. Hanna did is that she assumed allelic dropout based on the sample size.
No, I'm not talking about this particular one. I'm asking the overall. What is the overall formula they applied? Can you tell us what it is?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
It is a modified random match probability statistic, which is expressed in those SWACDM guidelines. And it, you can find it in the record at...
And how is that modified?
It's modified at Joint Appendix 31 and Joint Appendix 111. Both experts testify that this is a modified RMP statistic. And
okay.
In the Joint Appendix, at Joint Appendix 269, the SWACDM guidelines say, this document also applies the term RMP to mixture calculation where the number of contributors is assumed. This has sometimes been referred to as a modified RMP. And an example of that RMP is found in the Joint Appendix 273, in which the alleles are below the stochastic threshold, which is present in this sample. There are two potential contributors, which Ms. Hanna clarified on defense cross-examination, and the allele might have dropped out, allelic dropout. Those are the assumptions that she applied to this case. The scientific principles upon which she relied are expressed in the SWACDM guidelines. And the defense expert himself never offered an opinion that the appellant could be excluded, or
well,
that allelic dropout did not occur.
That would not be necessary. I mean, why is that important that he didn't say he could be excluded?
It's important because they only disagree about the interpretation of this data, and he himself supports the fact that allelic dropout occurred in this case, and that you could apply a statistic of two contributors, and he provides that testimony himself.
But without excluding, you still can have a situation in which the probability as to whether it's him or not is so infinitesimal or so small or so incalculable that it doesn't seem to make a difference. I mean, he doesn't have to exclude him. She has to include him, or she has to not exclude him, excuse me. And I'm not sure why you find it significant that he doesn't exclude him.
Because the way in which she approached this sample, as a scientist does, is that she tested the samples, took out the alleles from the major, and saw what alleles were left remaining there. Appellant has those, and so then he could not be excluded, and that's when...
Yeah, approximately 15 million men in the world could not be excluded.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
She said that 1 in 220 could have done this. Is that not correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, there's, what, 3.5 billion men in the world? So 15 million of us, or them, whatever, could not be excluded. So why is it significant that he's one of 15 million under the defense expert calculation?
Are you asking as a matter of the probative value?
I'm asking you why you think that's important that he didn't exclude him.
It's important because in this case, appellant denies any sexual contact with the victim.
Right.
And the other three males that were present in
right.
the home on the night in question were excluded from this same sample. So it does show, it has probative value to show that this sexual contact did occur between
the
appellant and the
victim. What's the normal, when you normally get a DNA range, right, it's the statistic that you get, what's the normal statistic? Because what struck me from the beginning about this case is 1 in 232, right, is I'm used to seeing more like 1 in 232 billion.
That is the normal type of statistic, Your Honor, but...
That doesn't bother you at all.
That goes towards the statistical significance of the sample, not its probative value. Here, the military judge deemed himself his own DNA expert. If you look at page 6 in the military judge's ruling, he draws conclusions that no expert came in to testify to. And, for example, he says...
Why doesn't the statistical significance go to probative value?
Because...
Why doesn't that figure make a difference as far as being probative?
It does not make a difference as applied in this case because this appellant was a potential contributor, whereas the other individuals were wholly excluded. Going under the Daubert analysis, the express teachings of Daubert lean towards liberal admissibility and allowing the fact finders to make that determination. Here, the defense expert understands this science and can cross-examine these witnesses. The defense expert can present contrary evidence in a user-friendly method, and the military judge can carefully instruct the jury or the panel on the burden of proof. Here, the military judge's analysis does not address any of those safeguards.
Well, it seems to me that the finding that whatever it was the lab did, leaving aside all the technicalities, did not comply with the SWGDM guidelines. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there about how we're a really good outfit and we get audited by all kinds of people and we get praised and everything else, but that's not the point. The point is, it appears that what they did didn't comply with these guidelines. So the fact that they've been audited by X, Y, and Z really is irrelevant.
Respectfully, Your Honor, the government experts testified that the SWGDM guidelines do not preclude their formula. The defense expert himself says their formulas and their operating procedures and their interpretation guidelines are clearly consistent with and derived from the SWGDM guidelines. Joint
consistent
Appendix 114 with. And 115. The SWGDM guidelines themselves encourage laboratories to modify these scientific principles as needed. The fact that this scientific laboratory has been applying this formula for 15 years and has been subject to external audits every 2 years, its own audit, and accreditation bodies who match this formula and the manuals and the testing procedures, everything.
Now, how do we know that they tested this formula?
Mr. Humble testified that they did. He explained the auditing process, something that the defense expert does not have any awareness of.
Did he specifically testify that they tested?
Yes, Your Honor. He said that they review case files applying this formula. And directly to the military judge, he said that these accrediting bodies have approved its use. They've never failed. And it's testing not only the international guidelines, the supplement to those guidelines, but the FBI standards that incorporate the SWGDM guidelines. That was his testimony, Your Honor. Again, the military judge abused his discretion because these clearly erroneous findings of fact permeated throughout his application of the Daubert framework. They all speak to the wide general acceptance of the science. They don't speak to the testing, which the military judge found this formula is testable. They don't speak to the peer review, which the military judge also found is peer reviewed, which this court and the Supreme Court has previously stated is a component of good science because it increases the likelihood that if there's some substantive flaw, that will be identified. In addition, the military judge pushed that into his 403 balancing test, and that is why he abused his discretion. He did not evaluate the safeguards as expressed in United States v. Daubert.
Well, they're alternative findings, aren't they? He found that it wasn't supported. And then he said, whether it's supported or not, it doesn't pass 403.
The problem with his analysis, Your Honor, is that although he says that, when you look at what he says after that, he still refers back to the defense expert's testimony. And when you look at the preceding paragraph, he's making conclusions that no expert testified to. For example, he looks at a particular...
No, that's not my point. My point is, if he had to err on both for you to win. I'm saying there are alternative findings. He has to err on both for the government. He has to be clearly erroneous on both for the government to win, right?
No, Your Honor, because he also misapplied the Daubert framework and usurped the fact.
Well, no, we're talking about two things here. We're talking about his particular factual finding, and we're talking about a generalized finding under 403. And isn't it true that they're in the alternative? He said, I find this to be not reliable, and even if it were reliable, it doesn't pass 403.
You're correct, Your Honor. That's what he stated. But when you look at what he stated after that, it shows that he, in fact, continued to usurp the fact finder's role and adopt only the defense expert's testimony. And the preceding paragraph also reflects the fact that, again, he's making conclusions at specific locations in the evidentiary sample without any qualifications or training to be able to do that.
I'm still concerned about his adopting the defense expert. If he's making a finding of fact, if that's his legitimate role, then what is wrong with adopting a witness's testimony?
Your Honor, he went far beyond adopting the defense expert's testimony and conducted his own DNA statistical analysis.
Then why do you keep stressing that he adopted the defense expert?
You seem
to be relying on that, and I'm just not sure why.
I'm focusing on that for two reasons, Your Honor. First, because he did far worse than that, and that's contrary to this court's precedent from before, saying it is the members who must decide among conflicting views of different experts, even though the evidence is shaky.
Okay, that's so United States v. Sanchez. What specifically in a military judge's findings, what specific language are you saying he where he conducted his own DNA analysis that it, we can't find anyplace else in the record? Specifically, which line, which page?
Yes, Your Honor. If I may, I see that I'm over time. If I may answer the question.
You can answer the question.
If you look at the military judge's ruling, on page 6 of the military judge's ruling.
Okay.
All right. He starts out the beginning saying, if you assume two contributors in this sample, and if allelic dropout definitely occurred, then he focuses in on the D13 locus. And he said, it would be possible that the D13 locus contained heterozygous alleles, and that would exclude appellant, who has homozygous alleles at that locus, as a contributor. And I would direct this court's attention to the defense expert's testimony about this particular location, because the defense expert says, the military judge questions him, this is in Joint Appendix 77 to 78. He says, you testified, this is the military judge, you testified earlier that there were seven opportunities to match between appellant and the sample, but was only matched at 5 locations. Can you explain that? And the defense expert provides specific examples to include this location and says at the D13 locus, appellant has 2 copies of the 12 alleles. So he's a 12-12, and the minor profile deduced by the lab, in fact, has just 12. So far, appellant is matching 3 out of 3 possibilities or opportunities to match. The defense expert did not provide an opinion that appellant would be excluded at that location. And yet the military judge went on and made his own conclusion that he would be excluded there. That is far exceeding any military judge's gatekeeping role. And then when they go into, again, the sample itself, the military judge questions him and says, let's take this case. 5 alleles at 4 loci, and at one or more of those loci, you only find 1 allele. And that's where the defense expert says, not quite right. What I would prefer to say is there are essentially 3 ways that one might look at such a circumstance. And that's where he provides the 3 possible interpretations of this evidentiary sample. The task is to determine whether the minimal standards of admissibility apply, whether the formula can be traced. It's been subject to peer review. In this case, the government requests that this court affirm the Army Court's decision to set aside the military judge's ruling because he made clearly erroneous findings of fact that permeated throughout his opinion. He zeroed in on only one factor instead of balancing that Daubert framework and usurped the fact finder's role and misapplied the force rebalancing test.
Are there further questions? Thank you. The court will now hear rebuttal.
Members of the court, Dr. Crane gave direct testimony that this formula was not reliable. While he did testify that it was clearly derived from the several types of formula that are in the guidelines, RMP and CPE, he said it is how it's applied to this particular sample. Specifically, at Joint Appendix 115, he states that they're using, and 86, he states they're using a mixed bag approach in how they apply their formula. They are mixing CPE with RMP equations across loci. That is what the guidelines the military judge found states you specifically cannot do. So here, there was testimony from Dr. Crane that when you have a sample such as we have here, nothing in the guidelines and nothing in peer-reviewed literature tells someone how to analyze the sample and give statistical significance. And that's at Joint Appendix 81 and 82. Now, the government pointed to the guidelines at 269, stating that when you assume the number of contributors, then this formula that they use is actually from the guidelines. But the government and defense said they didn't make any assumptions as to the number of contributors. They were just looking at the alleles at those locations and comparing it to the genetic population genetics. That's it. They made no assumption. So therefore, while they're saying that this formula is derived from the guidelines, it is not found in the guidelines. And the way they applied the formula to this sample, there's nothing in peer-reviewed literature, and the government didn't put on any evidence that there's anything in peer-reviewed literature that says they can apply this formula to this sample in the way that they did. Additionally, the government attacks the military judge, saying that he became his own expert. And they focused on the D13 locus. But here, what Dr. Crane was explaining was that
you can have two different alleles at that locus. They can be the same, they can both be 12, or they can be different. And he explained that if you assume that dropout did not occur, then you would have two 12s there. If you assume that dropout did occur, you would have a 12 and something else. Dr. Crane explained that to the military judge, and the military judge looked at that evidence and the guidelines and applied it in this case, demonstrating that he understood what the experts were explaining at the Article 39A session. Pending further questions from the court, we ask that you affirm the military judge's ruling.
Thank you, counsel. The court thanks counsel for both parties. The case is now submitted. The court will be in recess until 10:15.